lives on the sea. We built the steam engines to sail that wide prairie and charted our course with a lifeline of steel.
Isn't that beautiful? The song is titled Prairie Train, and the singer and the songwriter is our guest today, Lisa Johnson, back with us, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, and she comes by. We talk about all kinds of things when she's on the show, and we're going to talk a little about her CD to start, and then we're going to take your gardening questions as well, or maybe you have a question about the CD. I don't know. Lisa Johnson, welcome back.
Oh, busted. Thank you, Larry.
Well, it is a beautiful CD. You have a wonderful voice.
Oh, and thanks.
And the Prairie Train, I love that song. I really love that song. And the CD has many garden, outdoor songs.
Plants,
connected with it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of a hazard, I suppose, of being a horticulturist.
Well, I know you dedicated that to Brian Huddleston, that particular song.
The Prairie Trains, yeah. He and I, we've known each other since high school, and we used to botanize along the, yeah, we were plant geeks back then, too,
mm-hmm.
and used to go along the railroads looking for prairie plants. And that was back when the railroads used to maintain the tracks with fire, which favored the prairie plants. Now they use herbicides, which tends to favor invasive weeds, but, you know, it was true when it was written.
And the title of your CD is The Season, and I know that song is really pretty, too. You dedicate that to Master Gardeners.
Yes, I did. Master Gardener volunteers are some of the best folks you can ever want to meet, and I wanted to acknowledge all of the support they've given me over the years and all the wonderful work they do in their communities.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And
thank
the song, how'd you pick the songs? You wrote several. You've got some friends that have songs that are in there too. And
yeah, there are still more to come if I can ever scrape together the money to put some more out. But I wanted to do the ones that I've been playing over the years, and the theme was the season, so I wanted the most plant-related ones.
Well, there may be people, I bet there are some people who are listening who might say, I wonder how I can get a copy of that CD. How do you get a copy? I certainly love mine. How do you get a copy?
You can go to CD Baby online. I believe we've also got it out on Spotify and Amazon through CD Baby. And you can either download it or you can order a physical copy.
And it's the title of it is The Season, Lisa Johnson, the singer and writer of many of those songs. It's always a lot of fun. You love singing.
Oh, God.
Music.
Yeah. It was a 3-year thing, and a lot of really great professional. I'm just an amateur, but a lot of great professional musicians, Chris Wagner, Mary Gaines, Tom Castle, et cetera, helped me out. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe we'll come back to that. I think we will. Dave Potratz, our engineer, will bring back some little pieces, perhaps, along the way here. But let's turn to gardening in a different fashion and look more at the gardens themselves and maybe look at all those vines that people are seeing along the roadside.
Mm-hmm.
And you've gotten tons of questions about those.
What people are seeing that's flowering white or it looks almost light green is actually a native vine that's called wild cucumber vine. There's a similar species that's a bur cucumber, and it has been more prevalent the past, 5 years or so. We particularly see a lot of it when there's a wet year. And guess what we have?
Yeah.
My theory, although it's unproven, is that the seeds might be being spread along the sides of the road by mowing equipment, but it it's also, I think, birds that are spreading the seeds around. But it is a native. It's only an annual, and it's fairly harmless unless you've got a small tree or shrub that it's engulfed. But it is very fast-growing, can be used as an ornamental, and has fragrant flowers.
We got an email from, Matthew emailed to say he lives in Waupaca and sends a picture, found this in his backyard. Looks like hops when it breaks up.
Yep, that's probably Japanese hops.
I'm thinking that's Japanese hops, and that's another invasive.
Yeah, that one is an invasive vine, and that one is a perennial and fast-growing. Now, we do have hops growers in the state, too, so it is possible that it is, you know, a European hops. I can't see enough of it to be able to see the leaves, but that's a possibility as well.
And those, and that's probably mostly in western Wisconsin, somewhere of the southwest counties of Wisconsin where you're going to find those Japanese hops.
Yeah. Yeah, actually the DNR has a nice map on their website of where that's being found. Yep.
I happen to have it right in front of me as a matter of fact. So it's another one you'd like to pull and get that out of there.
Yeah, that definitely should go.
Pull it and get it out of there before the seeds release.
Drop.
Yeah. Well, so there's a couple of vines to talk about, and we got lots of other things. What about this water?
Oh, my gosh.
What kinds of questions are you getting from gardeners about that?
Well, we're getting a lot of questions from people who have vegetable gardens that have been underwater and, wondering if they can use the produce. And the most conservative answer is no. But
especially if there was flooding.
Right, exactly. And, you know, if it was the lake, or even if it was in a yard and, you know, by a river, there's all kinds of, if there were pet feces or, you know, some of the sewers flooded. So just not a good idea to be eating that. Now, some things that were above the floodwaters, like tomatoes people are asking about, it would be preferable not to eat them raw. It would be best to cook them, preferable not to can any of those things. We do have a very nice fact sheet that was written by Barb Ingham and Steve Ingham, who are food science specialists, food safety. And that can be found on Brian Huddleston's website, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic site. If you just Google UW UEX and then P as in plant, D as in disease, D as in diagnostic, and C as in clinic. So UWEXPDDC, and look under the fact sheets. It's called Safely Using Produce from Flooded Gardens. So you scroll down to S for safely.
There you go. I haven't given the number for people to join in, so let me do that right now, Ann in Kenosha already knows the number. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234 with your gardening questions as we visit with Lisa Johnson today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. 1-800-642-1234, or like Matthew did, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org if you've got a photo. Put it in the email, or just a question, you can email that as well. And you know what? Let's go to Ann in Kenosha. Ann, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have an invasive sort of taking over both my front and my backyard, and I didn't realize it was an invasive at first because I had actually seen the flowers, like in florist flower arrangements.
Mm.
I looked it up, and one name for it is purple bellflower.
Creeping bellflower, yeah, Campanula rapunculoides. That's horrible stuff.
Yeah.
My sympathies.
And what I've read, you know, if you try and dig it out, you just make it worse. Like, every little bit of root does something. So is there anything I can do to get a handle on this? It's taking over my lawn in the front and my vegetable garden in the back.
Well, unfortunately, because it's a perennial, it's very difficult to control. One thing you can do is make sure that the flowers are cut off before they go to seed, because that is one way that they spread. But the root system, there's these kind of almost carrot-like roots that are usually about 5 or 6 inches underground in a big tangle, and then they send up smaller roots that pop up little rosettes of leaves, and that's what you see at the surface. You see these little clusters of leaves that are actually all kind of connected, and you pull at those, and they come up with this wimpy little root, and you think that you're done, but unfortunately, way underneath that is where the biggest problem is, and it... I mean, you certainly can use herbicides on it. That's probably the most effective thing. But I've tried. I have it in my yard. I've had it for a number of years. And I've tried digging it. I've tried spraying it. I've tried spraying and digging. And it's still there. I'm thinking a small nuclear device perhaps yeah. might be the next option. It's just awful. I feel for you. I mean, you can try laying down carpets, but that's going to, you know, kill
everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't work very well for perennials. So really, if you're trying to eradicate it, unfortunately, the best option is herbicides. And the best time to do that actually is about right after the first frost. So we're coming up on that. We do have a fact sheet on it at our Learning Store site under the Natural Resources section. And it gives some chemical recommendations. I hate to recommend that, but boy, when it's running rampant like that,
yeah.
I know how hard it is to control. You can keep pulling it, and hopefully that will weaken it some, and you can fight a holding action. But when it gets into your lawn, that's a problem.
Really a problem there. So go to the UW Extension Learning Store.
Yeah, and look under natural resources, not the garden, not the lawn and garden section, but under natural resources, there's a whole bunch of fact sheets on invasive species by Mark Renz.
All right. And there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Dick in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Dick.
Morning.
Morning.
My question is concerning Asian jumping worm. They've infested my lawn, my neighbor's lawn. I don't know if there's anything to be done about it, but what's the future? The woods and everything else.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, Dick. But Dick had in Eau Claire has Asian the jumping worms.
Oh, the jumping. Oh,
and wonders yeah. what's the prognosis for this long term here, for maybe for his yard, but for everybody's
yeah.
yard.
Well, unfortunately, it has been spreading. The last I heard, it was in 20, 30 different counties now in the state. The DNR does have a publication on it. If you just go to the DNR site and type in jumping worms, you'll come up with that. I think, unfortunately, the genie's kind of out of the bottle on this one. You can try and keep it out by, limiting mulch and leaves compost and soil that you bring in, because all of those products might be contaminated. Any compost sellers, if they are following the DNR protocols, and the bigger ones are, they're composting very thoroughly. They have to heat the pile to a certain temperature, has to be turned 5 times. There's much less of a risk with those products than with a place that isn't composting so regularly. But when you've already got them, unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot you can do. There is a product that is labeled it's not labeled by the EPA for as a vermicide, but the the DATCAP has given Wisconsin a dispensation to use it for that, but it's only for experimental use. We really don't have a lot of data on it, but it is called Early Bird, and you can try and use that. It's an organic fertilizer that's been used by golf courses to control worms on greens, although they'll tell you that they're using it for as an organic fertilizer. But yeah, they have them down south in Kentucky and many other southern states. They have them up in Vermont. There are only a few researchers in the country that are actually working on this. I can, you know, I wish I had a silver bullet. I really wish, because I've got them too. I keep removing them when I find them. Yeah. And
that's about all you can. And what was the name of that product again?
Again, this is only for experimental use, because we don't have, I'm not recommending it wholesale in any fashion, but it's something you can try. And again, we don't have research on, and it will kill all worms. It's called Early Bird.
Early Bird. Yeah. Okay. Probably online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can check that out.
Dick, there you go. Appreciate
I wish I
your
had
call.
Better, yeah. better news for you.
Maybe we've got some better news coming here. Our guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, Dave Potratz, our engineer, for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your vegetable garden and maybe your flower garden and a whole bunch more with our guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And before we go back to the phones, you did have one more comment.
Yeah, one more comment on the jumping worm product. If you're listening in another state besides Wisconsin, it may not be labeled for that use, in which case it would be illegal to use that product for that particular use. So just wanted to make that very clear.
Okay. Well, now we turn to Marcia in Kakana. Marcia, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Morning. I made a new vegetable garden this past spring, and last fall I started it with the lasagna method. And I'm going to compost it again like I did last winter, but I want to add composted manure. Should I do that before I put the leaves down and grass clippings, or should I put the grass clippings on and then the brown?
I would put the browns on top, so that one reason that we use browns, besides the fact that they feed the fungi, is that it covers up the rotting greens so that you don't get the smell that you sometimes have with kitchen stuff.
Okay, that makes good sense. Marcia, does that help?
Should I put the leaves and the grass clippings in and then the manure?
Yeah. So you're talking about fresh leaves and fresh grass clippings, correct? And then you would put the manure layered on top of that. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. That's what you do.
Thanks, Marcia. Appreciate it. And on to Bobby in Stevens Point. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a question about an old oak tree that lost a limb in the spring and then dropped a lot of its leaves on one section, but the whole tree is not looking good. Is it drought? Is it too much water? Is it too dry? Is it a bug? Or is it just aging?
Could be oak wilt.
It could be oak. Yeah, there are a lot of different things that it could possibly be. What I would do, Bobby, if it were my tree, is I would go to the internet and look at the Wisconsin arborist site and get a certified arborist out to take a look at it. There are so many different things that the problem could be. A lot of the diseases look fairly similar, so a lot of that stuff you can't even diagnose visually. So if they think it's a disease, you may need to send a sample into the clinic on campus. But yeah, I would definitely have an arborist look at it. And if that limb that fell, if there's a ragged edge on it, having an arborist clean that up so it's a clean surface and less likely to provide an entry point for disease, that would be good. Problem is, of course, we don't like to do any pruning on oaks during the growing season because of oak wilt. Was this limb that fell off, was that a dead limb, did you say?
No.
Oh, it was a live one.
There was a live one, and it was like one morning I went out and there was this huge limb on the ground, and it was still green. You know, I mean, it was. But then since then the leaves started to fall, and now when I look up, it just looks like really in tough shape.
Mm-hmm. I'd get an
Get an arborist
certified
out there.
Arborist.
Yes, certified arborist that you can find through the Wisconsin Arborist Association website.
A tree like that, you know, you want
to. Those are valuable.
They're valuable tree. Yeah. You know, a tree like that might, what's the street value on that? Something $5,000 or $10,000 at least?
Depending on the size and shape and health. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Bobby. Thank you so much. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you with your questions about gardening in general. We talk trees, we've talked lawns, we've talked vegetables and flowers, all kinds of things with Lisa Johnson. Let's go to Ann in Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. You talked about that early bird stuff for the jumping worms.
Yes.
If you put that down and then a robin eats some of those worms that have been toxified by that, is that going to affect the bird?
I don't know. There's a lot that we don't have information on. It is an organic fertilizer. What it does, the way that it works, is it irritates the worm's membranes, and then they come up to the surface and dry out and die. So if you use enough of it in a lab, you can kill with it. But for the most part, it's acting just as an irritant and an expellent. I'm not a wildlife biologist by any means, so that's all that I can tell you. I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah, but if it's an irritant, sounds
it's not. I would think not
it's
absorbed.
It's not absorbed.
Yeah. What I do is I collect them. When you apply it, you need to water it in, and then about 40 minutes later, you start to get worms coming up, and I collect them, and when they are deceased, I inter them rapidly, because dead worm is one of the worst stinks you can ever have the misfortune to come across.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's about as bad or even worse than a rotting potato.
Brian might argue with you on that, but yeah, I agree. It's on par.
Oh, boy. Well, let's go to Colleen in Spring Green then. Hi, Colleen.
Hey there. We have a plum tree in our backyard, and I'm sorry to say I don't know what kind of plum tree it is. We've had a nice little crop for, you know, the first several years, and I think it's probably about maybe a 7-year-old, 8-year-old tree. And the last 2 years, the plums on the tree have got this weird sort of mummified appearance.
Yeah, mummies.
What is that?
It is a fungal disease. I think that is probably brown rot. I would have to look that up to be sure. What I would do is I would go to Brian Huddleston's website, the UWEXPDDC, and look under fact sheets. And I believe that it is probably brown rot on plums. I'm just checking my fact sheet right now to see if I can find it. I don't know. I don't have that one with me, unfortunately. But it does cause the fruits to turn into little mummies. And there are products that you can use. Plums, unfortunately, are susceptible to a number of different fungal diseases, but so are apples and pears.
And plum curculio, which is an insect,
right.
That would not be, it doesn't sound like that's an infestation.
That doesn't cause that kind of symptom. With the plum curculio, usually the plum is going to drop instead of remaining on the tree.
Yeah, there we go. Colleen, does that help?
That does help. I'm just really curious as well, just really quickly, does that kind of fungus, if it's that, can it also sort of cross-contaminate apple tree, which we have nearby?
I don't think so. That particular fungus attacks apples. I think it's just prunus, but again, don't quote me on that. Another thing that you can do is if you can reach any of the mummies, getting rid of them because they can act as an inoculum source would help. If there are any that are on the ground, rake those up as well.
All right. There you go, Colleen. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Dot in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Dot.
Hi, good morning. I would like to know if I gave my daughter the right advice. She bought a apple tree in spring, and she put it in a pot. She doesn't know exactly where she's going to put the apple tree, so to get through the winter, I suggested that she put the pot in the ground. And then in spring, she'll have a better idea where she's going to put the apple tree. Was that good advice?
Dot, you must listen to Garden Talk.
Yeah, that's exactly what, if it needs to stay in the pot over winter, that's what I would have recommended as well. And make sure to mulch it and protect it against rabbits. If it's a small fruit tree, they're going to love that. So try and keep the rabbits out.
Put some hardware cloth or something around.
Yeah, I like hardware cloth because you can get it in half inch and quarter inch sizes. Do be careful when handling it because the edges are sharp. Wrap it. You want to give the tree trunk plenty of room, but you wrap that around the tree trunk, and even if you can work it into the ground a little bit so that they can't dig under it. And then I usually use landscape staples, which you can get at any home improvement store. You can make your own out of hangers, wire hangers, if you want.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work because you got to have a pretty stiff tin snips. To do that, so you basically staple it down to the ground so that the critters can't get underneath it, and then be sure and remove it right away in the spring.
Yep, there we go. Thanks, Dot. Appreciate it. And on to Sarah in Cross Plains. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very large pagoda dogwood. Mm-hmm. That created a great deal of shade. It was planted on one end of my garden. And I lost it at the end of last year.
Aww.
It's been taken out. And I've got babies, but around. But Bishop's Weed has decided that it's very happy. It had been in an area that I've been working on getting rid of it for, well, maybe 15 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, not successful. And it has, and so that encroached into the area that had been very little growing because of the shade of the dogwood. So I want to kill all that Bishop's Weed, and I'm wondering if putting like cardboard, and you mentioned carpeting earlier, if I put that down now and leave it for the winter, in spring, would the Bishop's Weed be dead?
Very unlikely, I'm afraid. It's a perennial with a very aggressive root system, and you'd have to cover it up, I suspect, for a number of years in order to be able to kill that. And if you did dig it up in the spring, there would likely be little pieces of root that will resprout. Unfortunately, it's a pretty aggressive invasive. We don't recommend planting that. But unfortunately, it's been around for a long time as an ornamental And yeah, I feel for you.
Yeah, there's not much even chemically.
There are herbicides that you can try. And again, at that, I believe we have a fact sheet on that one at the Learning Store. I'd have to double check to be sure. But if we did, it would be under the natural resources section, just like the creeping bellflower. Otherwise, I know that Wisconsin DNR has some materials on that and recommended herbicides. I know none of us like to use them, but your only other option is to, you know, dig it out and repeat dig. It's
and
about
that's
the only
pretty
other
much
thing.
All you can do.
Yeah.
There you go, Sarah. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. We'll turn to Mike in St. Lawrence next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Larry. Question. There's little flowers that grow along the sides of the roads all over the place. They're yellow, they're white, some are blue, some are purple, of course, milkweed pods. And my question is, can I dig those up and transplant them in front of my kind of rural property? And alert the grass guy from the town not to cut them down? And will they keep growing? And if can I dig them up and transplant them? I guess that's my question.
I don't believe it's legal to do that. I'm sure they would grow, but I don't believe that's legal. What you could do is check with your local DOT, whether it's a county highway or a city, or whether it's...
Yeah,
you know,
county
state.
Or city, and,
yeah.
And you'd have to, regardless of where it would be, you have to ask permission from who's in charge
yeah.
of it. And the other thing you need to watch for and be mindful of, a lot of the flowers along roadsides
are aggressive,
and there are some invasives in there, too,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, what I'm guessing you're seeing is like the blue chicory and the Queen Anne's lace. I have no idea what the yellow might be because there are a ton of different yellow flowers, but some of them are invasive, like Larry was saying. So I would make sure of the species first, and then second, contact your local DOT and
find
out what's,
there.
Yeah, what's legal.
Okay. There you go, Mike. Thank you for calling. And Frances in Muskego, your turn. Hi, Frances.
Hi. I've got a problem with beets. We plant beets, and they come up, and then the leaves start to curl, and then they just keep on. I've tried several times to grow them, and they never produce the beets. The leaves get really bad deformed. Now, I don't have any black walnuts around that at all. So I'm wondering if you can help me and what that is and how I can stop it.
Yeah. Is it you're in a full sun area there for the beets?
Yeah, the full sun garden.
Huh. That does not actually sound familiar to me.
And no other types of vegetables are affected?
That?
No, I got big Brussels sprouts. I were eating cauliflower, kohlrabis, and everything else, but the beets just, the leaves just curl, real odd shape, you know. They get a real odd shape. Yeah, I've tried several times growing them, and that happens.
And do you grow spinach as well?
Tomatoes are great around. Of course, I got blight on the tomatoes, but that's...
Yeah. Spinach, do you grow?
I beg your pardon?
Do you grow spinach?
Yeah, spinach grows fine.
Okay. Well, I would, if you're really wanting to know what it is, submit a sample to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic next year and see if it might be. It doesn't sound like it's an herbicide thing because your tomatoes aren't affected.
That was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah,
but
when
nothing
you say
else is
something
affected.
Curling, that's typically what I think of.
Well, the Disease Diagnostic Clinic, if Francis has got the leaves right now, couldn't she send them in now?
Oh, yeah. If you haven't, I just assumed you pulled them out already because it's kind of late in the season. Do they have any spots on them, or is it just the curling? Oh, Jill says there is a beet leaf curl virus. Okay. I know they do virus testing at the lab, too, but I would think that year after year, that how many years in a row have you tried this?
This has been this year.
Oh, this is the only year you've tried them?
No, I grow beets every year, and I never had that trouble. That's why I'm wondering now.
Okay. I misunderstood. I thought that you'd been trying them several years in a row and were experiencing the same thing. Well, then that might indeed be beet leaf curl virus. You could submit a sample to check and see that for sure.
And you could go online. I don't know if the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic has something online about beet leaf curl virus.
That one doesn't sound familiar.
It doesn't sound familiar to me either, but I'd send in a sample.
Yeah.
Go to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and you'll get instructions on how to send that sample in. And they'll test it, and they'll tell you what could be done if it's the virus.
If it's a virus, there's no cure for
it. No.
But I don't know what the protocol would be for next year. I guess I wouldn't plant beets in the same spot.
For sure.
There are a lot of the viruses are transmitted by insects. So it could be that that's how it got there, something that feeds particularly on beets that didn't go to any of the other of the other plants. I assume you planted from seed, right? You didn't get these from.
Oh yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Huh.
Well.
That sounds like definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I would send in a sample and see what they have to say. Good luck, Francis. Thanks for calling. And Chuck in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Yeah, thank you. Say, on the compost pile, when I put some of the green stuff in, like old watermelon rinds and stuff like that, I give it a little shot of Rid-X, you know, for the stuff you use in septic systems that kind of breaks down the hard stuff.
Yeah,
I just wondered what you thought of that. I haven't had any problems with it yet, but, you know, I'm just curious.
Unfortunately, I don't know what's in Rid-X, whether there are any chemical carriers or anything that might not be a good idea.
I'll have to take a look and see what the ingredients are for Rid-X, and maybe we can even comment a little later on.
I don't think it's necessary to give it a jump start like that. If you've got a good pile that you've layered your browns and your greens, and you're keeping it moist but not wet, and you're turning it, it should decay on its own. I know they do sell some various bacteria and fungi as starters, but usually it's not necessary.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks so much, Chuck, for calling. Appreciate your call. We'll take a look at Rid-X and see what we can come up with here. And we'll get to Betty in Princeton, Wisconsin, in just a minute. But a reminder, our guest today is Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. Very involved in the Master Gardener Volunteer Program. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your garden today, your lawn, your trees, and a whole lot more with our guest on Garden Talk, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. Lots of good calls and some emails this morning. If you want to join in, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And now we'll turn to Betty in Princeton, Wisconsin. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I'm so glad that I heard you in time to call you this morning. We bought a couple of Tor birch leaf spireas and planted them in spring of 2017, and they did beautifully. We love them, and they came back bigger than ever this spring. They are on the our house faces south, and they're off of a patio that's on the front of our house, and but they're up against a, well, not right up against, but a east-facing addition on the house. And they get plenty of sun, I'd say, for probably, depending on the time of year, 5-6 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Lots of rain this summer, no problem with that, and I was watering when it was dry. And they dropped all their leaves at the end of August. They just turned yellow. There's a few leaves left on each of the plants. They aren't dead, but I'm just concerned, were they just tired?
The first thing I was going to ask you about was water. You, what is your soil like there?
It's sandy.
It's sandy. Okay, so root rot is probably not going to be an issue. That is unusual. You didn't see any insects or leaf spots?
Nope.
Okay, it just turned yellow. And was it uniformly yellow, or was it yellow just in certain areas?
You know, honestly, at this point, I'm not remembering exactly how it,
okay,
it just, you know, it was dying back, and looked like fall, except in fall it turns colors.
Yeah.
And it didn't do that.
Huh. Any fertilizers that you've been using?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, that side of the house hasn't been painted or
nope.
Anything like that?
Nope.
No herbicides used in the area?
No.
Okay. How about the branches? Do you see new buds on them, or are the branches kind of dry? And
They seem to be viable.
Okay.
You know, we kind of checked that, so it doesn't seem like it's not. There are little buds on the branches.
Okay. I don't have an explanation for that. I would say I wouldn't be too concerned if you still have what looks like viable buds for next year and the twigs are flexible and not, you know, dry and rigid. I would take another look at it, though, and see... was anything chewed along the bottom? Were the twigs girdled, or I mean, down at the very base?
Yeah, because we had a rabbit try to build a nest under one of them, and we found it before the little bunnies came along.
Uh-huh.
But we haven't noticed any damage at all. I looked.
I'm betting it's water. Too much water. I mean, too much water makes them drop.
Yeah.
And too little makes them drop.
Right. I don't want to say root rot, but, you know, sometimes stress like that, and yellow leaves can be an indicator of too much water. It may be because they're not as well established that they're having more trouble coping. I guess I wouldn't panic yet.
You know, the fact you got buds.
Yeah, the sounds like it might be a stress-related thing, but I would check the base just to make sure they haven't been girdled. That was the only other thing I could think of that would cause them to, you know, turn yellow and drop all the leaves.
Yeah, another good point. There you go, Betty. Thank you so much for calling. And on to Leslie in Cottage Grove. Hi, Leslie.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure.
I have a question regarding putting a garden to bed at the end of the year.
Sure.
We've got about a quarter of an acre that we have half a dozen raised bed boxes on, and the rest is open for things like squash and whatnot and tomatoes. To keep weeds down, we've covered that open area with cardboard wherever it's not planted, which certainly helps a lot with the weeds.
Yeah.
But at the end of the year, should we take that down, and should we be planting winter rye on it? Do we till the cardboard in or till it at all in spring? How does one do that?
Well, it would depend a little bit on what shape the cardboard is in right now. If it's still pretty intact, you wouldn't necessarily have to take it off for winter. That would certainly help with erosion or preventing erosion. If you did want to put down a cover crop, I would use something like oats and peas that are going to die over the winter. And I don't know, do you do any kind of tilling in the spring?
My husband usually tills it in the spring.
Okay.
And I hear things like that is or is not a good idea, so your advice there would be good too.
What wasn't a good idea?
Tilling, whether or not it's a good idea actually till.
Well, there are a couple of schools of thought on that. I would say that if you have been using something like cardboard or something like straw, then you could, you know, just plant directly into that. You wouldn't be able to do it from seed. You'd have to use transplants. So if you're planning on seeding, I think that tilling is not a bad idea. But if you're planning on using transplants, you don't necessarily have to do that. If you were going to use a cover crop, though, probably you're going to need to because it's going to be tall. You might even need to mow it before you till it in, depending on how tall it gets yet this year. You're up in, or you're in Cottage Grove. Okay, so you're down here. You should have plenty of time yet if you wanted to do that. I think it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other. But the cover crop will add some, you know, green manure. If your cardboard is disintegrating, sure, you can go ahead and till it in. But if it's still pretty big and chunky, then I'd probably remove it in spring and start over with fresh or use straw.
There you go. Thank you so much, Leslie, for calling. Appreciate it. Brian in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, will turn to you next. Hi.
Hi, good morning. A quick question. We last April, during the blizzard that we had in the Twin Cities, we had an arborvitae tree, a vertically shaped arborvitae, that was virtually bent at a 90-degree angle, and I hoisted it back up using hemp rope. And I'm just wondering if this plant will survive. It seems as though it's still, you know, green and everything, but I'm just wondering if it needs to be replaced or if we can save it.
So you tied it up in the spring, or you've just tied it up recently?
No, I tied it up immediately when we got home.
Okay. Have you taken off the ties at all to see if it's standing upright again? Because lots of times they will recover.
Well, actually, I haven't attempted that, but I will. I just was curious.
Yeah, it might just be, I mean, at this point, I guess you might as well leave it tied up because you're going to have to do that for winter anyway, especially if it's kind of demonstrated that it has trouble with snow load. I would make sure that, and you use a flexible tie. The hemp rope is fine as long as it's got some give. But I would check it again in spring and untie it after the snows have gone, and it probably will be okay unless it was broken in some fashion. Particularly if it's an older, well-established tree, it should be okay. Is it a younger one or?
No, it's been around for about a dozen years.
Okay.
It seems to have survived at this point anyway, and like I say, it's still green. So
yeah.
I just was curious. Do you know, is it a deep-rooted arborvitae, or are they shallow roots?
They're pretty shallow-rooted, as plants go.
Yeah.
They have a very vigorous, it's very fibrous root system, but they are somewhat shallow.
Mm-hmm. Does that help out?
Yes, thank you. And I'll use some hemp rope, and I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, there you go.
Check it, you know, untie it in spring and see. It may well have recovered already.
Yeah. It might well have, although a lot of the hemp ropes that I've had don't give very much.
I personally like to use old pantyhose because it's very stretchy and isn't going to damage the plant. But you might have to go. They don't sell pantyhose as much as they used to before. So
yeah, but they actually sell now some things that are actually made for it.
Right.
Which you could attach to the hemp rope, probably. Well, thank you, Brian, very much for calling. I appreciate your call. This is the time of year we start thinking about spring planting spring bulbs.
Yeah.
Basic guidelines for that?
Depending on where you are in the state, if you're in the upper half of the state, now would be a fine time to start. Here in the lower part of the state, I probably would wait until the 1st of October because you want to make sure that the soil is cool enough.
And any particular planting methods or just...
Well, pointy end up is always good. Usually you want to plant 2 to 3 times as deep as the bulb is tall.
And if we don't get them planted, we always get questions about this every year. I didn't get around to getting them planted. What can I store them?
If they're things like tulips or daffodils, you can, try again in spring. You can try storing them. Sometimes they dry out over the winter. That's it. If you still have them in spring, you can go ahead and try it.
And then how late this year yet can they be planted?
They can be planted up until the ground freezes. So I used to work for a landscaping company. I remember a few times we had to lift the frozen soil off the top and plunk the bulbs in underneath. So, and they still did fine the next year.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I've never planted quite that late. I'm too lazy.
We kind of got caught.
Oh, man. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. She's been doing this for how many years now? You've been doing it a long time.
May of 2000.
So quite a few years under her belt, and it's always fun to have her with us here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And don't forget about her CD as well. It's called The Season. Lisa Johnson, the singer-composer, here on Garden Talk. Lisa Johnson there playing her guitar, and her song, that particular song, is Prairie Train, part of her CD called The Season. Great to have her with us today on Garden Talk. Love that music. It's really, really pretty. And we'll talk maybe some more about that later on, but we have some callers with some gardening questions and some emails. If you have a question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Anne in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I would love to plant bulbs, but do not really have a good place to do it around my house. And I was wondering if I could plant them in big pots at this time of year. And then if I could, would I keep them in the garage or outside? And, what other things should I know about planting bulbs in pots?
Okay. What kind of bulbs are we talking about here?
Tulip. I'm not sure. What was the
daffodils?
Daffodils?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Daffodils, that kind of thing.
Okay. Usually I would not set them outside because, first of all, your pots might freeze and break, but it usually gets too cold when you have a small volume of soil like that and it's not underground. So if you have an unheated garage, because these also are going to need a cold period in order to grow properly and come up and bloom in the spring, that would be the best thing to do. I'd wait as long as you can. You're here in Madison, right? So I'd say like the end of October or so, put them in the pots and put them in your garage.
And if you've got an unheated garage or maybe a detached garage, there could get a little colder. I'd probably put a board underneath.
Rather than having them set on the floor, I don't know that it's necessary to put straw or anything like that around them.
But at least a board on the floor.
Right. That's a really good idea.
All right. There you go, Ann. Thank you so much. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Patricia emailed to say her American bittersweet is taking over other plants.
Aww.
What's the best way to remove the bittersweet?
Oh, yeah, that one's a hard one to get rid of. I'm glad to hear that it's American bittersweet instead of the invasive Asian one. but the easiest thing to do, I'm assuming it's growing on a fence, would be to cut it down to the base and remove all of the branches that are on the fence or the trellis. And the easiest thing, honestly, to do would be to get some Roundup and paint that on the cut stump. Otherwise, you'd need to dig up the root system. But you could... And I would make sure it isn't like 1 or 2% Roundup. You'd want to make sure that it's about 18 or more percent active ingredient.
Let's take a call from Sarah in Middleton. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I had a quick question for you. I planted a morning glory this summer, or spring, late spring.
Okay.
And it was all leaves, not a single bloom on it. And I'm wondering what I did wrong.
It's in sun?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, mine did the same thing. It did not start blooming until about 2 weeks ago. And I don't know how to, I got them actually even as starts. And I thought, I'll be ahead of the game. And I don't know what happened with that. I don't know whether it was because of our weather pattern or what caused that. I'm not sure that you necessarily did anything wrong. Do you know what variety it was?
No, I wondered if I was using the wrong fertilizer. Do they need a special fertilizer?
No, they don't. Now, if you did put too high a nitrogen fertilizer on it, you might have gotten a lot of leaves at the expense of the flowers. So I wouldn't use anything that's real high nitrogen, like 15% or more could be an issue. Slow release would be fine.
There you go. And give that a try and see what happens next year. Thanks,
yeah.
Sarah. And Pat in Oconomowoc. Hi, Pat.
Good morning.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I had some tulips growing this spring, wonderfully coming up, and then we got that last snow. And when the snow went away, the deer came and ate all of the stems.
No
blooms yet, so... Did those bulbs not get any nutrition because there was no stems or leaves or anything? Do I have to replant all the...
Oh, if there weren't any leaves, I would imagine that, yeah, they didn't get any nutrition, especially if they were, the hybrid types or like the Darwin or Emperor or, any of those big ones. You might need to replant. If it was the little species ones, they still would do a lot better if they had nutrition. It just might be too much for them.
And you could, I suppose you could leave them in there.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't like dig them up, but you might need to replant with something else.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And try it again.
Thanks, Pat. Thank you for calling.
You can use, by the way, Liquid Fence is a decent repellent. I don't know whether it would work, but you could give it a try.
Annie in Baraboo, your turn. Hi, Annie.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have hybrid daylilies that bloomed mid-July, and I'm wondering if it's safe enough now to cut the leaves back to 6 or 8 inches.
I would wait. The longer that you can allow them to photosynthesize, the better. I know some of the evergreen ones tend to lose a lot of leaves after they bloom, but I would not cut them back until they start to go dormant.
There you go. Thanks so much for calling. I leave mine. They just stay all winter.
Yeah. Yeah, you can cut them back in the spring as well as in the fall, but I usually wait until I'm doing my fall cleanup to cut those back.
Liz in Shorewood, we go to you next. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I had a Kentucky coffee tree I took out of my yard 2 years ago, and it has it was probably well over 100 years old.
Oh, wow.
And it had an extensive root system. It had gotten brittle, and it was dangerous. It was dropping huge branches.
Oh, yeah.
it was a disappointment. But when we took it out, its root system now has shoots coming up everywhere, baby Kentucky coffees throughout my entire grass, throughout my garden beds. I'm wondering if there's any way I can stop this from happening.
I assume you've been mowing over them, right?
Yes, and yeah. ripping them out. And then yeah. I pull out long roots, huge roots.
You're sure this was a Kentucky coffee tree and not a black locust, right?
I'm certain it was Kentucky coffee. Okay. We had so many arborists out trying to save it.
Okay. Aw, I'm sorry. That's sad.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you're probably going to get that for a while as long as the root system still has energy in it. The only thing that you could do, I'm assuming this is going out into your yard. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. You could use a broadleaf weed killer that isn't going to affect your turf and squirt the little shoots as they come up. Otherwise, just keep mowing it and eventually...
And pulling it out of your
garden. Yeah, pulling it.
out of your garden area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll probably be there for a while if the tree is as big as you say, that the root system still has a lot of
Another year
energy.
Yet.
Yeah.
Another year yet, probably. And then it should go away.
Hopefully, yeah. I remember a friend that had a black locust do the same thing, and actually it was more like three or four years before it finally went away, but he didn't use any kind of herbicide, so.
There you go, Liz. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Robin in Manitowish Waters. Hello.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So my question is, can natural wood cedar chips, you know, used for mulch, can that harm a tree or bushes?
Well, if it's piled up against the trunk or it's more than 3 inches deep, 3-4 inches deep, it could, not because it's cedar, but because it's too deep and some trees are going to be very sensitive to that. Is there a tree that you've used it for mulch?
Well, we had two tall, I mean, these are probably, goodness, I don't know, 15 to 20 feet tall short needle pines, and they've been there a while, and I don't know how old they are, but we recently put some mulch down because there had been some mulch, but there was nothing there, and we recently put it down, and one of them, you know, turned red, orange, and died.
Gone.
And so I'm not sure if it was just that tree's time, but the other one is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just curious if those chips could have done something, but...
This wasn't, like, made into sawdust, was it? It was just, like, inch diameter chips? What do the chips, what are they like? And is it fresh chips or?
They're fresh, yeah,
okay.
And they came from a nursery. So, you know, the nursery brought them over, and they weren't like big chips, no. But
okay.
They were, yeah, more like where you'd just place it and it stayed, you know, kind of glumpy.
Okay. And how deep are they? And were they up against the trunk?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
No, I think we just spread them on the, you know, the ground portion.
Couple inches deep or?
Yeah, probably, yeah, I'd say 2 inches.
Okay. Because there are some plants that are really sensitive to that. I've never heard of that small of an amount having a problem with pines,
no.
As long as it's not up against the trunk. And I'm assuming it got plenty of water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's fresh like that, sometimes you can end up with a nitrogen deficiency right at the soil surface.
But then you'd think the other tree would
go too. Exactly. So not sure what caused the one tree to die, but I don't think it was probably the chips.
No, something else. unfortunately. We don't know what it was. Oh, there you go, Robin. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Beth in La Crosse next. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a huge garden, and every year I plant the sweet potato vine, and I'm thinking, why can't I take the, either the tubers or the vine itself and bring some of that in and start my own plants for next year? Is that possible?
Well, they do sell them from slips or cuttings, and they root very, very easily. So I think you could take some cuttings and bring them in. I don't know how well they survive as cuttings over the winter, but take a bunch of them. I would think that you could do that. I haven't tried it myself, but that's how they sell them. So
yeah, experiment a little bit there, Beth, and see what happens. You're not out anything, so why not just give it a try? I would. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too at 800-642-1234. And email us at ideas@wpr.org. Terry emailed to say he is part of a community garden. They have 4x8 beds. How can they improve the soil? Just a minute. How can they improve the soil over the winter? Is rye or buckwheat a good idea? If so, where does he get buckwheat in the city?
I'm sorry, I can't see where he's from.
He didn't say where he's from.
Okay. Well, the problem with rye is that it may not die over the winter, and the same with buckwheat. So I wouldn't use that particular thing in raised beds. I'm assuming that since it says 4x8 that those are raised beds.
Yeah.
I would rather use something like oats and peas that are going to die over the winter. You can do that. If you happen to be in Madison, I know the Middleton Farmers Co-op does sell cover crop seed. The other thing that you could do is you could call the Dane County Extension Office and ask for the ag agent or the small farm agent, and they may have some other recommendations, because they both are very well versed in cover crops, where they get their seed from.
All right, there we go. And Bob emailed to say that his 20-year-old mock orange browned out this winter and died. The leaves curled. It had plenty of water and sun. Could it be stem wilt?
Boy, there's a lot of things that could cause that kind of symptom. My first guess would be too much water and root rot. When you say plenty of water and sun, Ed, we did have an awful lot of extra water this year in many parts of the state. I'm not sure where Bob is emailing from. But to be sure, if there's any of it that is still alive, you could send a sample into the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. It's really hard once it's all dead, because then you have other opportunistic fungi and bacteria that move in, and it's hard to tell what the cause of death was. But if there's any of it that is still alive, you could do that. You might want to give the clinic a call first, because they might want root samples instead of branch samples.
Yep, there you go. Nancy in Appleton emailed to say that she has ostrich ferns that have done very well for years in a shady bed on the west side of their garage. This year they've been stressed. She first suspected drift from a neighbor's lawn service, but now wonders if they needed dividing like other perennials. She'd like to renew the bed. Is it okay to lift, divide, and reset ferns in the fall? Is there still enough time for the ferns to get reestablished before the frost freeze here in the Fox Valley? And do ferns lose vigor if crowded like other perennials?
Well, it's a lot of questions. Okay. It's interesting, because most people are always trying to get rid of their ostrich ferns because they're so aggressive. It's interesting. I've never heard of them being stressed. Again, usually they're like way too vigorous for people. they can get crowded, so that could be the issue, especially if they're surrounded by cement on all sides and they're really crowded together, then yeah, you should probably divide them. I am not sure, though, for ferns whether it should be spring or whether it should be fall. I suspect with ostrich ferns that it's probably not going to matter whether you do it in the spring or the fall, just because of how vigorous they are. What you might want to do is divide and reset some of them and then do the rest of them in spring, so that if fall didn't work out very well, that that spring would you'd still have some of them left.
Let's try Ed in Middleton. Hi, Ed.
I have a black plum tree that I put out, and I thought it was going to be a bush, and now it's getting like it's almost like 7 or 8 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So I want to get it out of there, and I would like to move it somewhere in anyway. What time of the year would you do that, and where would I put it? Because I have, my brother has farmland, and I got a place in the back of the yard.
Okay. You want to do that in very early spring before the plant starts budding out. So maybe March. You know, you want the ground to be unfrozen, but you don't want it to have come out of dormancy yet. And you want to try and give it, now it's only been in the ground a year, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So then you probably are not going to have a whole lot of root system to worry about, but I'd try and leave the root system as much intact as you can. I'd have a tarp standing by and try and move it. You might want to get a couple of people both lifting with shovels at the same time so that you can pull it out in one clump and put it on the tarp. And you might even want to use something on top of the tarp, like the painter's plastic, so that you can then kind of wrap up the root system and move it to wherever you need it. You want to keep the root system as moist as possible.
And in terms of planting bulbs, can you dig up existing plant bulbs and plant them right away?
Sure, you can do that. You don't have to wait
dry
for
out.
Them. No, you don't have to. If they're established bulbs and they've got root systems, you want to try and preserve those.
And how do you store tropical milkweed seeds for planting next spring? He collected them in a paper envelope. Should they be refrigerated?
If they're tropical, I would say no. If they were the ones that grow here natively, then yes. But the tropical ones, I don't think you should refrigerate those. I've actually never tried those from seed.
I haven't tried them either.
I do know if you want to get the silks off, you get a bucket, a metal bucket, and you throw after they've been out of the pod, you throw a match in there, and that will quickly burn up the silks, and it will leave the seeds.
Seeds right there.
Yeah.
Nice little trick.
Yeah, I learned that from Frank Hassler of Good Oak Ecological.
Lisa Johnson, our guest today. We had fun listening to her music today as well. And that CD, The Season, is available. How do people get a copy of this CD now again?
You can go to CD Baby or Amazon, Spotify. It should be available on any of those. You can order a download or get a physical copy.
And the title of the CD again is The Season, and the artist is Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. Thank you for listening. Stay with us.